This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Joining me today in the JPR studios, someone who has not been here for quite some time. It is very good to see her. Welcome to Dar Williams.
Thank you.
Dar, welcome back to JPR.
Oh, thank you.
We were talking in the parking lot. It's been something like 10 to 12 years since you were last here at JPR anyway. And the last time you were in the area, we think it was at the Rogue Theater in Grants Pass, last performance, right?
Right, a couple of years ago.
A lot has been going on
in the last
10 years. First of all, you've got a brand new record out. It's called Emerald. I want to talk about that in just a bit. There are an awful lot of special guests that you have drawn into that creation process. Was that an intentional thing that you wanted to do when starting to think about a new record, or did it just happen organically?
It definitely happened organically, but early on, I was writing a song that had to do with these boys I'd seen sort of jumping off of these big boulders in Vermont, and I wanted the song to have this very brotherly feel, this very fraternal honor system. And so I thought of the milk carton kids, and they had opened for me on their way up. And I said, guys, can you come? And they said, yes, but, you know, I knew I would do that in L.A. because I wanted to do it on their turf. And then there was a song that I really wanted to do, you know, that was this great homage to the 70s, and the person I had that really inspirational conversation about the 70s with was Jill Sobule. Mm. And I wrote her and I said, look, do you want to do this? And she wrote back and said, twist my arm. So, you know, so early on, every song sort of had its little partners in my head. And it was an opportunity to go around the country and sort of fit it into whatever touring I was doing to go record the songs. I'm a big girl now. I know how to do that.
You know, in addition to the standard recording of records and going out on tour performing, you have taken music in a bunch of other directions. You have been leading songwriting retreats and teaching the process of songwriting to others, I gather, at these retreats. Tell me about that structure. What do you actually do at these things, and how often do they happen and where?
Well, I do three of them now, and three a summer. And my a friend of mine said, I taught a college course about music movements, and he said, you know, you love teach. Every time you talk about it, you get so excited. You should lead a songwriting retreat. And I was like, oh no, because I'm never going to teach someone how to do a press pack, or, you know, how to make it, or how to make a cold call to a club. And he said, well, why don't you teach songwriting? And I said, because everyone will think. And I thought, wait a minute, if I give it the right title. You know, and I taught at Jorma Kaukonen's Fur Peace Ranch. I taught songwriting there. And I realized people just want to write a song that feels important to them. And it's really not so related to where it goes in the world. You know, a lot of people want to write songs for their loved ones. And so I said, you know, if I could call it writing a song that matters, we'll probably get people who are in it for the interior process, not the exterior, you know, going out in the world. And sure enough, that's what happened. And there's a whole, so I sort of developed, I don't know, is it called pedagogy? Like I developed a little technique for what works for me as a kind of a grab bag. So we have a lot of more solitudinous stuff in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we have like a clinic time where a person will sing a song, and then we'll spend 10 minutes in the afternoon talking about it. But I've always been a person who's kind of loved to zero in on what's going right, you know, how something is working and where we want to get it, as opposed to being that person who's like, yeah, man, we got some problems here. So early on, I discovered that that was actually what helps people trust each other. And then they're very kind to each other, too. And we're all part of this team trying to figure out what we're trying to say. Mm-hmm. And it really creates some very strong bonds all around. And it can get very, one woman sang her first song she'd ever written, and she cried between every verse. And we just sat there and waited for her to have the moment. And then she kind of got it together, and she sang another verse, and then she cried. And then, you know, she I don't even think, she apologized at the end. And we're like, why did you apologize? That's totally cool. And, you know, it was, when you're writing a song, there's a small V voice, you know, the voice that you're singing. And then there's like the big V voice, you know, how you are expressing yourself. And so I really just try to create an environment where you can kind of get to the big thing and not feel judged.
Yeah. You mentioned very quickly in passing there, the college course.
Oh, yeah.
Music movements in a capitalist democracy. What?
You know, it was just going to be called like music movement. It had to have the word democracy in it because of the program that I was teaching. And so it had, and I was like, you know what? You know, I was just like feeling the whole, in Canada, they pay for the health care, but also they subsidize a lot of album creation
and touring
and tour yeah. some touring and then they're and festivals. You know, there's festivals, and then there's a Canadian content rule on the radio. I mean, there's a lot that says that they respect the artist and the artistic process. Like, we'll take a chance on you. You know, I mean, there's just an ethos, and that's just different in the United States, where it's like, you know, I was just looking at this picture of lovely, lovely Katy Perry with her, you know, bright pink hair and her, you know, PepsiCo endorsement. It's just different here for an artist. And there was no way I wasn't going to address the fact that, that capitalism has its effect on, you know, it's these sensitive artistic sensibilities.
It's a terrible metaphor, but it almost seems like the difference is here in the States, it's a bit of a lottery. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, there's a sort of a workplace that you can get involved on the ground floor, and there are people to help you and teach you and shepherd you along the way.
Exactly. I think that there's a mutual respect for what's going on in that process, and that it's part of your culture, and you respect your culture, and you know, it's not a complete lottery in the United States, because you do have to put in the work, but I think sink or swim might be and in order to swim, sometimes you need some very, very psychedelic little floaties. You know, you have to really market yourself in a certain way, and the 90s weren't as much that way for me, to be honest. There really was, you know, if you connect a song to an audience, they're not going to, you know, after I gained the baby weight, there wasn't the blogosphere wasn't alive with critiques of what I look like. And I've never had a boob job. I've never had a nose job. You know, the connection was always about the music, and I had that luxury. It's just a little bit more complicated now.
Dar Williams is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. Her newest release is called Emerald. Information at darwilliams.com. It is, we were talking about this before we went on the air. This is officially record 9, or are
it's
there more?
It's my 9th studio album.
9th. That's yeah. a lot of music.
Thanks. Didn't feel like it.
Well, speaking of music, why don't we hear you play something, and we'll talk a little bit more about the record specifically. What do you want to start with, and who have you brought in to play with you?
This is Matt Mayhall on my right, and well, he's here, everyone. And this is Bryn Roberts on keyboards, and Matt plays drums. He's not going to do drums now, but he agreed to join us for harmonies. All right, this is called Something to Get Through. Thank you.
That is Dar Williams live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Her newest record is called Emerald. Information on her 20-plus year career. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
At darwilliams.com. Let's talk about the record a little bit. I mentioned right at the top that you had a number of guests, and you referenced Jill Sobule, but who all is on this record? It's a lot of great people.
The LA group was with Jill and the Milk Carton Kids and Richard Thompson. So I went out to
not
his.
Bad.
Yeah, he. You know, sometimes you ask and they say yes. So it's mostly because he's just a great guy. So I asked, and he played on the next song I'm going to do. And then I went to Nashville, and I wrote a song with a woman named Angel Snow, and she's really gifted and someone to look out for. So we recorded that one together, and then this last song, I really wanted, again, that sort of feeling of friendship through the harmony. So we had these beautiful Nashville vocalists, and we did that song down there. And then I recorded a song I wrote with Jim Lauderdale down there, and that was a ton of fun, too. So, and then I went up to Vermont to Will Ackerman's studio of Windham Hill fame and recorded with some really talented people who record with him. And then recorded with Lucy Wainwright Roach and Suzzy Roach, mother and daughter, in New Jersey to do a song. And then also did a song in Pennsylvania with the Hooters and a wonderful, talented guy named Trevor Gordon Hall, who's going to open the shows in Eugene and Seattle for this trip. He's an instrumentalist as well.
I'm really glad you mentioned the LA group, because in addition to all of the guest artists that you have and co-writers, I'm guessing, you recorded this record in a bunch of different locations.
Yeah.
Now, from an outsider's perspective, there's very definitely a Nashville sound, and there's a sort of Seattle and Portland sort of sound to the music. When you're putting a record together and you're recording songs in so many different geographic locations, is it difficult to create continuity from song to song?
Well, that's what all the producers thought. They were really unpsyched. Like, every single one of them was like, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. And I would play them little bits of things that I was doing that, like, oh, yeah, now I really don't know about this. So, you know, at the end of the day, I guess the through line was me and my voice. And I just felt like that was enough. And I've had really eclectic albums before. My Better Self was much more eclectic than this one. So I just thought, oh, hell. So, and then I got to go and help people. You know, it's hard in the business now to kind of get everybody in the same. So it was a good exercise to kind of keep everything organized and go to the things. And actually, the person who's with me here in the studio, Bryn Roberts, he is a jazz guy in New York, and he and I also wrote a song together that we recorded in the East. So that was another great collaboration. In fact, probably the hardest for me because it was sort of out of my genre. So I have a lot to thank him for.
Speaking of all of those places that you recorded, do you have a preference for what kind of physical space you like to be in as you perform?
No. I think, well, you know, I used to, when I was younger, I mean, that excitement of, you know, when I would open for somebody and I was just starting out and there was this huge theater, and like I was in a theater in Charlotte, North Carolina, where Joan Baez was singing Amazing Grace, and there were these stained glass windows, and the promoter turned on this light at a certain point, and the stained glass windows all lit up, and the audience was, you know, you can have these kind of big spiritual things. But I was in Atlanta, and I used to play sort of in a bigger theater there, and then with the recession, they're like, why don't you just do two shows at the smaller thing? And people were kind of on top of each other, and the windows were steaming up, and it was so great. And I thought, you know, I kind of like the pile of puppies, smaller, intimate.
Is
you
that
know.
What you call them, pile of puppies?
Well, no, not in Atlanta, I don't. But generally, I mean, I just like I like that stuff now. I think there, I used to enjoy sort of the spectacle of the big stuff, but now I like the intimacy of the smaller stuff, and I just make sure that I, you know, shave my legs. Because they're much closer now. Or don't shave my legs, depending on what city I'm in.
Well, I got to say, one of the songs that certainly is foremost on this new record, and from what I understand was also the seed of making a new record, is pretty close to us, FM Radio, being that that is what we do, and we have been doing it for a really long time of playing records. How did that idea come about to write a song about, I guess, nostalgia of just listening to music on radio?
Well, when I was teaching this music movements course, we taught movement by movement, and I was doing sort of 60s into 70s, like the civil rights movement going into the Black Power movement, and then, you know, all these manifestations. And Jill Sobule and I were playing in Vermont. She flipped over on her computer and she's like, do you know about M5? And look at them, and like, look at the pants, look at the hair, look at the, and there's this, you know, there's the music and then there's the culture around the music. And the culture around the music was kind of spiritual, cosmic, political stream of consciousness, because you had these radio presenters who had these personalities, and you had record store owners, you know, back in the day, who were weirdos, and the culture of looking at records together in a record store, and so there was just a lot of that. You know, it was sort of a kind of a nice way to be in democracy for teenagers, you know, to be talking about Nixon and Queen and, you know, just have it all juxtaposed, and just, and all the ways that we were like sitting at the pool destroying our skin, you know, we didn't go inside as much because we didn't know what was happening with the UV rays. And So it was different. And I think also a really great time for kind of loosening ourselves up and looking at cultural values and then regrouping in time to get really uptight in the 80s, but it was loose. It was a loose time, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from being very nostalgic, like literally schmaltzy nostalgic for that time.
Yeah, I mean, you get to travel all over the country. Do you spend time these days still listening to radio?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of silence and news, too, I will admit. But actually, Matt's been playing some of his mixes that he's been making in the car, and sometimes music just gets in the way of what's in my own head. And that's really what musicians say. Like, they just, I have something else I'm working on, but I've been loving it, you know, so I need it, but I don't reach out to it as much as I should in the car.
2 decades ago, I used to make music. And one of the things that was always a problem for me was I'd come up with something and I would like it and think, hey, this is great. And then I'd realize, yeah, no, it wasn't mine.
Yeah.
It was something that I'd heard.
Yeah. You know? Well, here's the good news about this. See, this is the kind of thing that comes up at the songwriting retreat. So all you do is you locate it. You figure out who wrote it, like what it is derivative of. You listen to that melody line. You change like 3 notes and maybe the rhythm, and then it's yours. I mean, you know, as long as you figure it out before you put it out in the world and embarrass yourself. So that's cool.
So that is free songwriting tip number one from Dar Williams today on JPR. Mm-hmm. Dar Williams is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Her newest record is called Emerald. What do you guys want to do next?
Well, why don't we do FM radio since we're... since I'm feeling nostalgic suddenly. All right, so this is, and yes, I wrote this with Jill Sobule, so important to note. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, Mr. Lifeguard, up in the big chair, turn up the radio, you're looking good, yeah, dancing at the snack bar, singing to each other, you know the words from the record back cover, we got crawdaddy. You know what's going on, Sonny and Cher split. What took them so long? The boys are strutting like a foxy lady. So sing it loud in your hairbrush, baby. It's FM radio everywhere I go. FM radio, call up the night. FM radio everywhere I go. FM radio, call up the night. Lou Reed says he's a bisexual. Intellectual. Stevie Wonder bought a house for his mother. DJ Dylan as my sister and brother. We are the cosmos, we are the glam kids. Put the stardust on our eyelids. Nightbirds calling for a group meditation. Sending Patty Hearst a positive vibration. FM radio everywhere I go. FM radio. Orthodontist who cranks Zeppelin, the driver air guy, your barracuda off the high dive. On a date with a guy from Bandy, played a trumpet solo, it was Brandy. Every night I do stuff with my hair, maybe Queen needs a clarinet player. And the sailors say FM radio everywhere I go. FM radio, call up a night.
try to scrutinize. It's just a dead zone. Wake up the neighbors, tell me how do you feel, and live the fantasy that makes your life real. And if you wanna play, follow your glory. And if some guy says that's such a story, take a lesson from the FM that I knew then. It's like a public pool, you decide where to jump in. To feel the sexiness, the passion, and the fusion in the fission. Remember Bruce Springsteen, the voice, the model, and married a musician. FM radio, everywhere I go. FM radio, call of the night. FM radio, everywhere I go. FM radio, call of the night. FM radio, everywhere I go. FM radio, call of the night.
That is FM radio. It's Dar Williams live today on Jefferson Public Radio, a song from the new record called Emerald. I want to talk a little bit about some things outside of music for a bit. You have been, interestingly, really involved in bee preservation for the last couple of years. There's a familial connection, right? It's like your dad that's big into...
Well, my dad's an editor, but he was, yes, he had bees and growing up. And it was really, it's kind of one of those endless topics. And I did call him because, you know, I was reading all this stuff about colony collapse disorder, and I called this... beekeeper, professional beekeeper, and I said, should I go try to do bee-friendly gardens at summer camps, or are they going to freak out? I mean, would it help the bees? And the guy said, well, first of all, make it a non-freak-out thing for kids, and yes, it would help bees, because they just need more flowers. Like, they actually, for all that, like, we do extreme agriculture of bringing tons and tons of semis out to orchards and industrial, you know, all the problems like that, he said, bees also just want more flowers. There is a problem with this thing called neonicotinoids. I think that this one chemical is kind of like smoking. Smoking is to lung cancer as neonicotinoids are to harming 4,000 bee species. So that, I think, is the smoking gun. But it's not like you're going to go to a camp and talk to them about chemicals. and really, bees just get tired and they need more forage. And kids are like bees, you know, they're busy, they're industrious, they like flowers, they like sweet things, they like honey, they, you know. So it seemed like I could do it. And I called my dad and I said, you know, I can do that, right? I mean, I'm a crappy gardener, but it's fun to, you know, I could just talk about bees. And he said, yeah, sure, just do it. He said, I think, yeah, I was always thinking about flowers and things, interesting things when I was beekeeping. It's a fun thing. So I got in and did that with the kids.
So were you doing this as part of music-related summer camps, or was it completely separate?
Well, no, I would go and play, but I didn't want to, this is before I led the songwriting retreat. And I think I would still make the same choice now, because songwriting is really delicate. You know, you don't want to come in for 2 hours and do this with kids and then leave, you know, or possibly really hurt someone's feelings. And I just didn't think that was cool. But I like kids. I like hanging out with them and answering their questions. And I was like, what activity would be fun? And it turned out to be perfect. Because kids, a lot of summer camps used to be for like country club, like teaching your kids tennis so that they could become captains of industry who were good at tennis, or, you know, they didn't really get in the dirt and plant stuff because that's what the gardener did. And of course, now summer camps are whacked out. I mean, they're really fantastically different than they were back in the day, but they still don't have that thing of getting in the dirt, planting plants, and they're just starting to.
This has become kind of a common conversation over the last few years with artists that we've had coming in. But after many, many years of being signed to Razor and Tie, for the new record, no longer. You have now gone, flown solo, so to speak. Thinking back over 20 years plus of making music and being part of, quote, the industry, is there anything that hasn't changed? I mean, it just seems like everything is sort of decentralized now, and there are far more people making music because there aren't sort of the, for lack of a better term, filters, you know, where you'd kind of have to make it through an official channel in order to make it. It seems like everybody's just sort of able to do it now. It's a very democratic process now, more so than ever. Is anything the same as it was when you were first starting to make records?
As somebody pointed out at this meeting I went to, you know, trying to sort of deal with some of the problems that are going on now, there's still the performer, and there's still the artist, and then there's still the listener, and they still really like each other, you know, and, but everything in between has gotten really weird. So that, you know, the great thing about the songwriting retreat is that, and the, even the course I taught at Wesleyan about music movements is that we all kind of have this moment of recognizing how important music is to us, not just pleasant, but actually how it's the poetry and the context and the soundtrack and the emotive, ecstatic connection that we have to each other. And so that's the same. Your question is really good because you're saying what's the same. So a lot is different now, and a lot has to change to get to the place where we can create songs that matter to the world as well as ourselves. And there's a huge biodiverse, you know, shade forest of professions that are disappearing, you know, side people and engineers, producers, and even like marketing people. And some of the, there was something to it, the publicity and all that stuff. I mean, I loved my record company and they did a good job and they worked hard and that was their expertise and that was the job that they believed in. And some, you know, so a whole bunch of stuff has disappeared. And I like the idea of having excellent producers out there. I like the idea of not, you know, growing six extra arms and doing it all myself because I'm terrible at it. So the good news is that we still have, you know, poetry still affects us. And there's a shorter attention span and stuff like, I mean, there's stuff to compete with just even the way people listen to music. But that thing of sitting down and letting music move you in community as well as individually is the same.
Yeah. And if I understand right, you were talked into performing song by song your first record again as sort of an anniversary tour thing.
And well, yeah, I didn't understand. I was like, so I can just do the ones I want. And they're like, no, you like. I was like, I'm not Jethro Tull, you know. But they said, no, Dar, this is the way it's done. So I did the whole thing. Yeah.
Something that came out of that I thought was kind of interesting, and I hope it was an accurate quote, is you said something along the lines of, "I recognize the songs, I don't recognize the voice."
Ugh. Yeah, the voice. Wow, it's just so different, and it really it's a kind of a mind game. So yeah, it just doesn't sound like me, but that I guess it was.
You know, what's interesting with music and listening to music is that, as you well know, probably over your career, people take from songs what they hear in the songs, right? It doesn't necessarily matter what you intended when you wrote it; it's what people get out of songs. To you, how has your songwriting changed 20 years after you were first doing this and putting out records?
It's totally the same. I was talking to somebody, they were asking me about my first song that I wrote when I was 11, and I was like, oh my God, it was the same. I was like walking around, I heard sort of a cadence, I heard a lyric, I heard a rhyme, it started to formulate, you know, the hook, whatever, and it's the same process. Something is interesting and it sticks, and then things form around it, and then it becomes a song, and if it doesn't, then it just is like an idea in my head.
But the primary instrument sounds a little different to you now.
Well, I've taken some voice. You know, you don't go on the road with Joan Baez and not come home and take voice lessons. So I went and did a lot of voice after Joan. And I did a lot before, but I found someone with, you know, a master's in voice from Yale who is unbelievable. And it made a huge difference. It just opened me up a lot.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to catch up with you again. It's been too long.
Thank you, Eric. No, I'll totally come back, and congratulations on all the plans you have for the station.
Yeah, when we get the new facility, you'll come play it?
Yeah, I will pledge next year, all and right. Then I will come play it.
Sounds great. Dar Williams is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record is called Emerald. Information at darwilliams.com. Will you do us one more?
Yes. I'm really excited to play this song in Oregon because this is where the song began, and there's lots of references to it in the song. Here we go. I have come to the west, the Emerald Kingdom Highway, like a hero's path I'm following. I don't know what to think, what to do with myself today. Shouldn't I hear the future calling me? Under a low cloud, vanishing up through the tree line of the mountain,
catching light from the morning on a river come to life, the Grand Columbia. I've returned this time to these cafes in autumn, and for once I am unquestioning. I can see the boatman shout over the wind and engines as the gold coin shower from aspen trees and into the twilight. A hazy moon on the amethystine river, watching the heron lifting up and her wings spread wide as the Columbia. Unbeknownst to my pride, I had filled my memories with these hours of gold and emerald light. I can plunge my hands into all this time I've lived, and the jewels spill through my fingers. I have come to the west, to this canyon highway. I can see a girl is passing. She is going so fast I can hardly tell it's me. Doesn't she know that she'll be traveling under a low cloud out of the northwest into the Rocky Mountains, across the prairies to the Appalachian Rises? Now the Pennsylvania farms into the traffic of the eastern cities, into my town, onto my street, up the stairs and through the house, grab the kids and out the back into the garden.
That is called Emerald. It's Dar Williams live today on Jefferson Public Radio. That is the title track from her brand new record. Information at darwilliams.com. Dar, it's great to see you again. Thanks again for coming by.
Thanks for having me.